FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz. It's 6/20/18. Well, the Trump economy, Trumpphoria, everything is going great. The economy has never been so good before, so you're led to believe. But is it true? Well, first, as always, be a part of the show. Love getting your emails. Best part of my day is in the morning, kicking back a cup of a left-winger coffee company's brew and reading your emails and then responding to you. So KL at Kerry Lutz, as a reminder, is the email. So where are we heading? Are we living in the best of all possible worlds? And if so, how long will it last? Well, Robert Wiedmer is with us now. Bob, you've written a number of books about this very topic. You believe there's some very, well, let's just gratuitously call them storm clouds on the horizon that's going to lead the country through a difficult period, but long run, you're optimistic. Unfortunately, in the long run, as John Maynard Keynes said, we're all dead. So hopefully the optimism will pay off within your lifetime and mine, but welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Lord Kerry. Appreciate it very much and good to be on.
Right, so optimism, pessimism, where are you?
As you said, I am optimistic long-term. I don't think you and I will be dead when I talk about long-term, but certainly the kids and grandkids will be there. And as a lot of people said, I'm worried about my kids and grandkids. I understand. But the long-term, you know, that they're gonna be there. And that's really what to me is most important, is that long-term, the kids, grandkids, and their kids do well. And I think that we will. But yeah, we're in for a period of change. But to kind of key off your initial comment, is the economy doing well? Well, yeah. I mean, no question, the economy is good. But I'd say when you're borrowing $1 trillion a year, it's hard not to be. And that also is not just a this year issue. It's not just Trump or whatever. All that government borrowing has been a big help to the economy the last 10 years. And in fact, I did some research. If you deduct government borrowing from GDP growth over the last 10 years, we've only had 1 year of real growth, adjusted for inflation and for borrowing. So that it's been really important in the last 10 years, not just this year or next year, or last year, where government borrowing, you know, we know is going up and it will be important. It's basically been the growth engine we've had since the financial crisis. And that was not true in the 50s and 60s. Very different economy then.
Right. And the amount of economic activity that a dollar worth of debt buys us nowadays is like net 25 cents for each dollar spent. It used to be several dollars worth, so they told us.
And that was, yes, back in the 50s and 60s, probably got a little more. But what I'd say is kind of what we were talking about before the show. It's a buy now, pay later economy. You know, if it's even 50 cents, quote, I'm getting a bang for my buck and I never have to pay it back, well, great. What the issue is I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, right now, nobody is worried in the slightest about, or I shouldn't say that, but nobody's that worried about the debt. They're worried, but not really that worried, or you'd see it show up in the stock market and other areas. You know, bottom line, people figure, and when I do presentations, Kerry, the same thing comes up as I say, look, guys, you know, why can the government borrow all this money when it's already borrowed $21 trillion, which is, you know, almost six times its revenues? I mean, think about that. Six times revenues. How many banks would lend to a company with that much debt or an individual? Nobody. And I ask people when I do my presentations, why can the government get away with it and at low interest rates? And almost invariably, everybody raises their hands and says, because they can print money, right? Mm-hmm. So we can borrow forever because we can print money forever. And I would agree. We can print money forever, but can we print money forever without creating inflation? I don't think so.
Yeah, money that'll be worth something, right? I mean,
right.
Social Security supposedly in deficit now. It's drawing on reserves. Yep. But what are the reserves? The reserves are IOUs from the government that is broke, that has no money, that has to print up money to pay the IOUs to Social Security. So where does that get us?
Well, it gets us a little farther down the road. I mean, again, the economy is good now. Activity is good. The borrowing does help. I mean, the advantage of buy now, pay later is you do get to buy something now, and it's good. It's the later that's the issue. And some people would say, well, it's the how much later it's the issue. Well, I don't entirely agree because I think our kids and grandkids make a difference, but I don't think it's so much later it won't affect us. Yeah, I think it's going to affect you and me, and not this year, not next year, but ultimately the government has paused its printing now, and I think it's important to say paused. We've still printed a lot, almost quintupled our money supply, and I don't think that's the end. If I thought that was the end, then maybe things could be different. But I think we're going to be printing again. I think we're going to need to boost our stock market, boost the economy, but, boost that stock market. And we're going to print again, and I think we're going to see that eventually you do get inflation. And once you're there, what do you do? Print more money? You can't do that. And we're already at 3% inflation, according to the government. That's not huge, but it's rising. And I think you start printing money again, and we're going to see inflation head up. And then that's when the problem really begins, because then you start scaring the bond markets and everybody else. And ultimately, people do lose faith in those bonds that they're happy to buy for 2% now, or 3% for a 10-year bond, or even 3.5% for a 20. So it's not going to happen long term, but I think for the next couple of years, all's good, so to speak, in terms of a major problem.
So are we going to have a Paul Volcker come to the rescue and save us from inflation? I mean, how do we get to 20% interest rates again without the whole thing collapsing?
You don't. That's exactly what happens. The whole thing collapses because we're now so dependent on low interest rates. I think, and I'm not, obviously we know the government, we know a lot of individuals, we know the housing market. I mean, do you think home prices would be going up if we had 10% mortgage rates? Don't think so. Mm-hmm. But even corporations, I just read it in some report. I think it's, I forgot, it was one Standard & Poor's, but one of the groups had said that even with a relatively modest rise in interest rates, corporations, about 20% of corporations would have trouble paying their debt. We've got corporations that are highly indebted. Mm-hmm. They borrowed money to buy back stock. And, that's why not? Money's so cheap. Why not buy it? Why not borrow it and buy back some stock and make everybody happy? The management, the stockholders. So you've got debt everywhere. We're very dependent upon interest rates. You can't do the Paul Volcker treatment. It just can't. And if you do, which in a sense, it's not what we'll do with Paul that'll cause the problem. It's inflation that'll force interest rates up. The Fed's not going to want to do it. And they're certainly not going to kill out inflation by raising interest rates. You're stuck. That's why you shouldn't get in this in the first place, is Volcker was in an economy that was very different. The Dow was at 1,000. Mm-hmm. 1,000. We're at 25,000 now. Obviously, everybody remembers housing price much lower. I know people got mortgage loans at 10%. Not a problem because, mm-hmm. I shouldn't say not a problem, but they could certainly buy homes because they were cheap enough that even a 10% mortgage was not unaffordable. So you're in a totally different world than what Paul Volcker was facing in 1981.
So now you can buy a home for it's almost 5%, call it a 5% mortgage. At what mm-hmm. point does the real estate market tank because the rates go too high? We're not used to 6-7% and higher mortgage rates. We haven't seen them in a generation here, Bob.
Literally. I remember when my father in 68 got a VA guaranteed mortgage at 6.75%. This is a pretty darn good mortgage, right? Mm. Literally a generation, we haven't seen rates this low. I think when we're at about 4.5, and you're right, rounded it's 5, but I think you go over 5% on the 30-year mortgage, and I think you're going to start to see problems. Not tanking, but you're going to start to see problems at 5%. We're not there yet. And at 6 or 7, you're right. We're absolutely not ready for it. It might be another year before you hit 6 or a year and a half. But we're not talking a huge increase to get to 6, about 1.5 from where we are today. And I think we're going to hit it. And yeah, you're going to start to see it hit the housing market, which has frankly been, you know, part of the growth driver, again, outside of, you know, government borrowing, which is really a fundamental driver. But within that, housing's done well, and house prices have gone up and encouraged people to borrow money on their houses and or fix them up, and just makes them feel good. You know, and their house prices going up, they're more willing to spend. So I think it, when you hit 5 and then 6, both of those are going to be real hurdles for the housing market.
So what do you do to prepare for this is the question. If you see the tsunamis coming at you, you get to higher ground. If you see the volcano is erupting, you get to another island or to the other side of the island. What do you do here?
Well, okay, first of all, let's recognize that's hard to do because the part of the island you're on is low-lying, and it's got a lot of good fertile land because the mountains have eroded onto that fertile soil down on the lower part of the island. So running up the mountain isn't such an easy thing to do because you kind of lose your income and your money to some degree. So you have to save some to go up the mountain, and nobody really wants to do that until the tsunami is a little closer. I understand that, and it's easy to think it's coming tomorrow. I mean, I'll have to admit, I'm very surprised that even after quintupling our money supply over the last 10 years, that we haven't had higher inflation now. I mean, it'd be very surprising to have seen that 10 years ago. So it's easy to get a little too worried. So first of all, don't get too worried for the short term, but long term, recognize, yeah, you need to, you know, do the typical stuff, save your money. It doesn't mean you can't have in a stock market today. I think, you know, we've had a good market last year, and, you know, maybe even this year, we'll see. Certainly some dividend stocks work for a while. But just be aware that, you know, when that sea starts to pull out a long ways, you know, the ocean pulls out first before the wave comes in.
Yes.
That, you know, it is a problem, and you need to ultimately get out, save your money. Cash actually will hold a bit of its value in the sense it's not going to go down in value other than inflation, which will be a big hit. You know, yeah, I think gold long term will do very well. Doesn't mean it's going to do well this year, although, you know, it did okay last year and it might do okay this year, but I think it'll do real well long term. But until then, you know, stay on the fertile ground, make some money off this market, but be aware that sea, you know, the tsunami is not going to come all of a sudden. You're going to see the ocean pull out first, so to speak, before the tsunami rolls in. You'll see problems in the stock and bond markets. And I'll certainly be saying it. And a lot of people, you know, have read aftershock books and know it. I'll certainly be saying that, you know, tsunami's coming. And I'm telling you right now, it's not, but it will. And save some money. Don't blow it all right now. Save some money that you can keep with you and head up the mountain with a little pile of gold, and you know, you'll do just fine.
There's a certain inevitability to all this, isn't there?
There is an inevitability, and people think, well, if it doesn't happen next year, it's not inevitable. No, it's inevitable. Just, you know, the more, you know, you can put it off and make the tsunami way bigger, but that also is more damaging. But there's an absolute inevitability, and why? Because it's hard not to do something where you get easy rewards. You know, it's hard not to do something that gives you the free lunch, meaning it's hard not to borrow, you know, the government not to borrow, especially when interest rates are low. It's hard for corporations not to do it, hard for consumers, homeowners not to do it. And it's hard not to print money if the initial result is, well, free money and no inflation.
Yeah.
And again, let me repeat, inflation's not a matter of whether you have a hot economy or slow. It's not like inflation heats up. I mean, if inflation was a sign of a hot economy, the hottest economy in the world right now is Venezuela.
Hey, I don't see them lining up at the doors to get there, right?
No, I don't. I think it's going to get worse. So,
yeah.
Nostradamus in saying that, but yeah, exactly. They, you know, high inflation tends to go with a lousy economy, and that's what you'll eventually get, and you get it because you print money. U.S. it's been slow, but I think it will come, and there is an inevitability about it. Simply because we're making the obvious, easy choice, easy to understand, but boy, yeah, it's painful later on. But then that's true from government on down to individuals. We're making an obvious, easy choice that is nice now, but very painful in the future.
Yeah. And we know it's coming, right? There's no question. And
there's no question because it's hard to reverse. You know, again, the Volcker treatment, as you said, that's one of the ways to reverse it. you can't do it when house prices and stock prices are so high now. It's hard. Yeah. It just, you know, 15% in interest rates would be crushing.
Oh, yeah.
Really crushing.
For sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. So gold, silver, what do you do?
You know, I would keep some now. I tend to suggest to, you know, readers and clients that they, you know, keep some gold now, some physical gold or even ETF gold. And I think that's fine, sort of a long-term hedge. But, you know, that's long-term. Right now, some high-dividend stocks tend to do reasonably well. Even this year, they've done okay. So I think in a sense, some little standard investment advice on that is good. Be careful about bonds. People have said that for years. In a sense, they've been a bit wrong, but I think, you know, with our new Fed Chairman Powell, he's pretty clear he's going to keep raising rates, and the Fed, you know, has made good on that. And those raising rates aren't going to be good for bonds you bought 2 or 3 or 4 years ago, and bond prices will fall. So, you know, I would tend to do a little more high dividend stocks, even with the ups and downs. Again, if the market does go down, which I think it will, and it could be a lot, like 20-30%, I think that the Fed will come in, print money, and push it back up. That's almost a guarantee. It's part of that inevitability, in a sense, you say, is we're going to try to do everything to keep this thing going as long as we can. That's good short term, but not good long term. But I think the Fed will print money, push the stock market back up if it takes a big plunge. And so even if you just held through it all with high dividend stocks, you'd probably do okay. But, you know, maybe some bonds, but I, you know, be a little careful about that. And then eventually, yeah, have your eyes on some gold or silver. That's ultimately what does the best in a difficult environment when that finally hits.
And hit it will. So I think we can see where this is heading, and really we just have to prepare ourselves as best as we can. What's the country going to look like after the inevitable occurs, Bob?
Well, it's very different, because I think a lot of people, even myself, will be kind of shocked that we really did this, you know. Believe me, when looking back at it, just like the internet bubble, I was in, you know, I was in the high tech community. I know the internet group, and right. A lot of them are pretty smart. A lot of them did a lot of good things, but a lot of them did some really crazy things. At the time, people sort of went, yeah, well, that's part of a new industry and industrial evolution. And, you know, you have 100 car companies and it goes down to 3 and all that. And so at the time, it seemed okay, a little bit offbeat. But, you know, a few years later, everybody looked back and said, oh, well, this is crazy, and pets.com and the prices they paid. So I think we're all going to be a little shocked. I mean, when it really happens, because I don't think anybody really thinks inflation can happen. I mean, 10% or 15% inflation, it could easily go higher. But even 10% would be shocking. I don't think people could understand why the government couldn't sell a 20-year bond at 3 or 4%, even though looking later, of course, there's a big risk there. I mean, right now, the difference between a 10-year bond, I guess, and even a 30-year bond is about 0.5%. And I guess 10 and a 20 years, about 0.5%. So you're basically saying there's no risk, no chance of inflation over a 10-year period. That's going to look crazy in hindsight. You know, right now, we say, well, that's good. Good, low interest rates. But I think the country's going to be shocked. And I think they'll, in a way that they sort of know they did something wrong. In other words, that, hey, this isn't a short term. This isn't just a simple correction. This isn't just an internet bubble. Wow. No, the government's in trouble. And that's something really we've never faced in the U.S. to any significant degree. Other countries have seen really big government financial problems. And don't get me wrong, we've had some government financial problems with the federal government, certainly local governments, but nothing on the order of basically people getting scared of buying U.S. government bonds. And that's what ultimately happens. And I think even I'll be a little shocked when that happens. And if you're scared of buying U.S. government bonds, think of what people, you know, say about the stock market. You know, it's a really different environment. It's not the end of the world and all that kind of thing. But for some people who thought asset prices would never go down, which again, years later will look kind of silly because asset prices absolutely go up and down. But this time it'll be more final because the government was involved in pumping up those asset prices. We never did that. You know, right. Even Herbert Hoover, our president during the Depression, didn't sit there and say, well, gee, the market's down. Let's pump the prices back up quickly as possible. No.
Roosevelt arguably did a little bit of that, though, didn't he?
Yeah, Roosevelt did, but it wasn't as much designed purely to pump up asset prices as much as it was more to try to, you know, get some economic activity going. And yeah, that had an effect on the stock market and so forth. But it wasn't as asset price focused. It really was economic focused.
Right.
Whereas we've had a decent economy over the last 10 years. I mean, yeah, after the financial crisis, what we've been really focused on is pumping up those asset prices. I mean, you know, it's been stunning. Yeah, the economy's grown. It's been, you know, good. But man, stocks, real estate, unbelievable. So the government's more focused on that now than ever before. I don't think really never. Yes, you're right. Some policies have been, you know, encouraged stock markets growing. I mean, even the 50s, we had some very good years. And you could say that's, you know, due to government policies and economic growth. But yeah, I mean, we had economic growth and stock market should go up. I mean, we had really good economic growth in the 50s and some of the 60s. So, and we did. We had pretty good economic growth after the right. depths of the Depression. And so you expect to see that reflected in stock markets. But overall, stock market, you know, it did recover by, I think, 1938, but, you know, it didn't grow that much in the early 40s. The stock market was pretty slow until the 50s. In fact, Merrill Lynch, you know, didn't really get his company going. I mean, Charlie Merrill with Merrill Lynch didn't get his company going until the 50s because there wasn't really much of a market for stocks until then.
True.
It wasn't that, it was considered pretty risky. So, yeah, government coming in and saving asset markets, unusual. And I think, again, in hindsight, we'll see all this look really silly, but we'll be pretty shocked. And I think we'll recognize we kind of did something wrong here.
Kind of. Hey, so looking at the Trump tax cuts, what has that bought us?
Well, it's bought us, you know, a boost to the stock market. Now, we may have seen a lot of that last year, but unquestionably, the tax cuts, a lot of that has gone into stock buybacks and increase in dividends and acquisitions. We're seeing big acquisitions, M&A at near an all-time high. All of that stuff helps stock prices. You know, hopefully, if your company gets bought that you're invested in that at a 30% premium, that's great. Great for the stock market. People want to try to kind of put their money on some stock they think will get bought, and that's great. Obviously, stock buybacks help. So I think it's bought us that. It'll be interesting, and I'm even a little surprised myself. I thought we'd have a better start to this year in the stock market, but maybe a lot of that boost from the tax cuts was felt last year. When they finally happened, we didn't get much. I mean, actually, of course, we got a bunch in January, and then we lost a good chunk of that, although NASDAQ is nearing a record high this year. So overall, I think it's still positive. But, so it's bought at certainly higher stock prices. And again, all of this borrowing helps boost the economy, too. But I do think there's a downside to borrowing $1 trillion a year. There is, and it's maybe longer term, but we're in for $1 trillion a year deficits now for a while. Not that we weren't in for that anyway, just I think we were scheduled to hit them in like 5 years, not this year. But at this point, we're running hefty deficits, and that is a result of the tax cuts and, you know, other issues that were coming anyway, you know, higher spending on Social Security and Medicare and so forth as we get older. But we sped it up with the tax cuts. But, you know, from an investment standpoint, definitely been a plus for the stock market. And I think will continue to be. You know, we'll see. May have a correction coming up here in the next few months. But overall, no question that you know, it's a boost. It's a real boost because companies have a lot of money to buy back stock now and buy other companies.
Yeah, like Comcast, AT&T and Time Warner. So two, you know, basic monopolies that what we're going to get is just a bit more debt for the company. It's going to owe like over $100 billion. And probably we're going to get lousier service too, right?
Probably so.
Don't you think? I mean, would that surprise you?
Yeah. Again, that's from, you're going to get companies that are heavily indebted, very heavily indebted, and lousy service. But it's going to help the stock market overall. And, you know, the prices of the individual companies we'll see involve the merger. But merger mania is unquestionably a plus for the stock market. It really does get people excited to see these mergers and acquisitions. And so, crummier service. But again, you know, better, happier stock market.
Better stock market. I mean, it seems like we're the proverbial dog chasing its tail. You know, Bob, it's just like we run around in circles and we think we're making progress, and then reality is going to come and bite us on the butt.
Yeah. Yeah. But we're happy until then.
Yeah, but it sure does feel good until then, right? Feels great until then.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, but we're just going to have to go through this. There's no avoiding it at this point. There's no policy. Is there any possible policy the government could adopt that would prevent us from this fate, save us from it?
There's no policy you could adopt that doesn't incur a lot of pain right now. Hence, I don't think we'll do it. So, you know, that's kind of what we're trying to avoid in general is pain. So I don't think we're all of a sudden going to change our minds and decide we want a lot of pain right now. And again, each year you put this off, the more pain it is to change early.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I could recommend some policies to change this, but I couldn't recommend any that wouldn't have a lot of instant and, at this point, pretty significant economic pain. So, no, I don't think we're going to do that. I think we're going to do, and I've said this many years ago, I think we're going to do just the opposite. I think we're going to move towards policies that are less painful now and much more painful in the future. And, you know, that was said before I knew we'd have a $1 trillion deficit this year. And I'm saying that now before we print a lot more money, which I think we will in the next few years to support stock markets that are very high and the economy. So I think we're going to choose the less painful route. So just the opposite of something to solve the problem. I think we're going to choose the less painful route that makes it much worse. I think that's practically inevitable. You're not going to have a personality change in the next few years.
And that's
in the country's outlook. Yeah.
And that's what we always do, correct?
Well, yeah. Well, though this is fairly unprecedented. You know, governments never focused on, you know, keeping up asset values like it has this time. So, but yes, in a sense, from human nature, tendency is going to be take the easy way out. I'm not saying everybody always does that, and I don't say America's always done that. We a lot of times we've taken the hard way out, and I think gotten rewarded very well for it. So I think this is a little unusual for this country, and even, you know, maybe not for human nature, but there are times that people will take an opposite, take the road not taken very often, and our country's done that before, and so I'm a little disappointed to see what we're doing now, but. You're right. I understand it. I think it's a bit inevitable at this point because you're so far down the line that it is hard to recommend any policies that would, you know, cause a lot of pain. And I think instead people will be in a state of denial and just say, well, I think it's all good, Bob. Hopefully. I hope you're wrong.
Good. It's all good.
That's what I hear.
I love it. Well, hey, it's been great speaking with you, Bob. If we want to find out more about you, buy your books, check out your latest article, where's the best place to go for that?
Aftershockpublishing.com. Aftershockpublishing.com is the website. Aftershock is the book. It's on Amazon. And those are the best two places to go.
All right. Excellent. Hey, well, if you got any questions for Bob, myself, been a really enlightening interview, Bob. I want to thank you for that. Any questions, comments, email us again, kl@carrylutz.com, Twitter feed @CarrieLutz. Facebook page is Financial Survival Network. Bob, we'll talk to you again real soon. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Carrie. Good to be with you.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get 3 free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.